Good evening. In the news tonight, union members and affordable housing activists rally on the steps of City Hall. Human Rights Watch releases its report on 2015, which looks at 90 countries. They say fear has been driving human rights abuse. Commemorations today on International Holocaust Remembrance Day. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Wednesday, January 27th, 2016.
The people united will never be defeated.
The people united.
Community members, union bosses, and workers rallied on the steps of City Hall today, angry about the lack of affordable housing, angry that housing in the city is being built with non-union labor. Gary LaBarbera is president of the Building and Construction Trades Council of Greater New York.
We believe deeply in the principles of affordable housing, and we believe deeply in the principles that the affordable housing has to truly be affordable. But we also believe that the workers that build that housing have to have a path into the middle class. You can't have workers that is going to be building affordable housing that can't afford to live in the affordable housing. That doesn't work, right? So that's the plan.
And LaBarbera says it's not just luxury buildings that are being built with non-union workers.
A lot of non-union workers are used in affordable housing, and they're terribly exploited. Terribly exploited.
So what do you think needs to be done?
There needs to be standards. There needs to be requirements. Primarily, there has to be a focus on creating good, safe jobs in the affordable housing arena. That's yet to happen.
Rasul Heatley is with Local 79 and BCW. That's 100 black construction workers. He lives in Harlem but works all over the city.
Non-union workers are dominating the sector. We need to get them up so we can be accountable of the safe structures we do make and be accountable for the people that's working. We need good equipment, good buildings with good people doing it.
One of the problems people have said is that the non-union labor, it's not that unions oppose these workers, it's that the workers aren't trained in the same way that union workers are.
Their workers aren't. Here in Local 79, we have a great apprenticeship program where we teach you the basic rules of being safe and how to do your craftsmanship. And then in time, you grow your craftsman until you become a full journey person. And we can all turn around, and when another person come that you don't know is a stranger, you still know he or she has been trained the same way and we can get the job done.
Heatley says he sees changes in the character of his Harlem neighborhood.
The neighborhood looks as it was, but it's changing in terms of the rent. People are getting pushed to Brooklyn or getting pushed to the Bronx, so the accessibility of being in Harlem, which will soon be North Manhattan, will be great for people that want to get down here and can afford the old style houses. Like, the neighborhood they never wanted is the neighborhood they need to have now. Now the riches and the beauty of it is obvious, and people want to get involved with it.
So what do you want to see happen?
Well, what I need to see is people take a realistic average of the money people can make so people can have a place to live. I want people to realize that union labor is a great labor. It's the American way, and it's the way we really get things done. And just make sure we can get jobs for a lot of other people in a lot of different ways, too. We got to get people to get paid and get some money for them to work things out.
It's time for the low-income people in the city, to have the right to affordable housing.
Angel Vera is an organizer with Make the Road New York. He also sees changes in his neighborhood. He lives in Bushwick.
In our neighborhood, there is a lot of displacement because of gentrification. People with different income, higher income, are moving to our neighborhoods, and low-income people, people of color, especially Latino people, are being displaced from our neighborhood. Also, small business are being closed and moving out because new business are being opened by new people.
So what do you want to see the city council and the mayor do?
We want the city really to take a decision and start building affordable housing and start protecting low-income people, because most of tenants in New York City, they are on the table, they are being ignored.
New York City public advocate Tish James wants to see four things regarding housing and affordability.
Current guidelines exclude more than a quarter of New York City households in need of affordable housing. Second, we have to demand the construction of even more affordable units if the developer chooses to build the units off-site. And third, we must designate every newly zoned community as a tenant anti-harassment zone. Yes. Anti-harassment. Yes. And fourth, we must guarantee equal treatment of all tenants in a building, no matter what they pay in rent. Right. Everyone should use the gym. Everyone should use the terrace. Yes. Everyone should be treated equally and fairly. Yes. No matter how much you pay in rent.
James says we have the opportunity to shape the housing landscape in the city, and we have to get it right. Caution is what Scott Stringer, New York City's comptroller, is advocating.
We need to understand that zoning and land use is the way we protect our communities, but we've got to get it right.
Get it right.
The second thing is, we have seen labor leaders invest and build affordable housing.
Right.
So you got to bring them to the table because they've done it for generations.
Yes.
And that is something that we need. So we need community-based planning. Do you feel that you've been consulted during this process?
No.
I haven't been consulted. Community boards haven't been consulted. And the only way we're going to build the next generation of affordable housing is by bringing everybody to the table. Stop rushing for a number and start working towards a real result.
And Stringer says there's an urgency to get the public housing right, that NYCHA needs appropriation, $40 million a year, to invest in New York City's housing authority. In other news, today is International Holocaust Remembrance Day, the day when the world remembers the atrocities of the Holocaust. Veronica Reeves reports.
The systematic extermination of millions of Jews and other minority groups, as well as homosexuals and political prisoners by the Nazis during the Second World War, should never be forgotten, said Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. He was speaking to a General Assembly hall filled with not only official country delegations, but also Holocaust survivors and their families. Mr. Ban called the murder of some 6 million Jews a colossal crime and expressed concern that aggression and hate continue to permeate lives around the world still today.
People worldwide, including millions fleeing war, persecution, and deprivation, are the targets of discrimination and attacks. Violent extremism, sectarian tensions, and hate-filled ideologies are on the march. Civilians are on the crosshairs.
Mr. Ban specifically referenced attacks by the Daesh terrorist group against the minority Yazidi population in Iraq and the siege of Madaya as examples of failing to hold accountable those who flouted international humanitarian law. Veronica Reeves, United Nations.
Dozens of elderly Holocaust survivors lit candles at Auschwitz today, exactly 71 years after the Soviet Army liberated the death camp. Some of these survivors wore sashes or scarves that recalled the striped pajama-style clothing prisoners were forced to wear. They placed candles and wreaths at a wall where many prisoners were executed before gathering with the presidents of Poland and Croatia for official ceremonies. This year's commemorations come as a resurgence of anti-Semitism casts a shadow over a new generation of European Jews, something that's driving thousands of them each year to leave the continent. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. There's a new report out by New York-based Human Rights Watch. It summarizes key human rights issues in more than 90 countries. Ken Roth is executive director of Human Rights Watch. He says over the last year, dominant rights issues were very much driven by fear.
Fear of being killed or starved, tortured or executed led millions of people to flee Syria and other countries such as Iraq and Afghanistan. Fear of what that influx of asylum seekers would mean, particularly in Europe, led many governments to try to raise the gates, to try to block further people from seeking asylum on their shores. Fear of terrorism, particularly prompted by the attacks in Paris, but also by the attacks in Beirut, the attacks here in Istanbul and Ankara and elsewhere, led many people to begin to scapegoat the refugees.
Roth says Islamophobia and scapegoating of migrants is the last thing you'd want in countering terrorism.
It's obviously wrong in itself, but it's also exactly what ISIS wants. If you were ISIS trying to figure out how do you build an environment in which you can gain more recruits, the first thing you would do would be to try to widen the divides in Europe, to build Islamophobia, and to make the Muslim population of Europe feel more and more isolated. Now, we all know that first-generation refugees are relatively unlikely to engage in any criminal acts, let alone violent acts of terrorism. The real threat tends to come from the second generation, people who grow up feeling that they are French or Belgian or German, but are not really accepted by those societies. They feel that despite being native-born, despite the local language being their mother tongue, they don't have the same educational or job opportunities. They're harassed by the police. They face a stifled future. And even though it takes only a small percentage, some small percentage is more likely to be radicalized.
Islamophobia is more likely to make that second generation feel more rather than less alienated. According to Human Rights, there is another different kind of fear documented in their report. In the age of social media, it's fear by autocrats. They are afraid of being held to account by their people who can organize demos and rallies using their phones.
This fear of civil society has become particularly acute in Russia and China, because both Putin and Xi Jinping have made an implicit pact with their people. They say, we will give you increasing prosperity. You let us govern without any real accountability. And that deal has worked for those leaders while the economy improved. But now that the economy is in trouble, those leaders are terrified that their people will begin to protest and revolt. As a result, in both Russia and China, we are seeing a crackdown on civil society of an intensity that has not been seen in a generation.
The Human Rights Watch on 2015 is available on their website, hrw.org. And that's the WBAI News for Wednesday, January 27th. The news was produced with help from Veronica Reeves at the United Nations and Reggie Johnson at WBAI's Brooklyn studio. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry. Thanks for listening.